Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha Editor's Roundtable, What Moved Markets This Week, for the week ending Friday, July 16th, 2021. A bit of a confusing week. We had a hotter than expected inflation report early in the week and some conflicting signals when it comes to consumers and retail sales later in the week. And add it all up, and we are now looking at losses for the major indexes for the first time in several weeks, if I'm not mistaken. Small caps are seeing the worst of it. The Russell 2000 at the time of this recording is down about 3.4% week over week. The S&P 500 is down about 0.5%. NASDAQ also seeing quite a bit of selling this week, down 1.3%. So that's where we stand. I am very curious what my colleagues have to say about all this, what they have to say for themselves. And let me introduce them now. I am joined by, in no particular order, Brad Olison, the VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am Nathaniel E. Baker, your host and moderator of this weekly panel. Let's start off with Kim, as we normally do, to give us the big picture lay of the land on what moved markets this week.
I think what we've got is a bit of a perplexed market. As you said, there's some mixed economic data. We had lots of it this week and, you know, all interesting in its own right, but all together kind of not being too much of a help on where things are going as far as the recovery is concerned. Very hot inflation, retail and wholesale, surprisingly good retail sales numbers that then suddenly countered by a big drop in consumer sentiment in the Michigan survey. We've got inflation worries in the Michigan sentiment, but no inflation worries in, or, you know, lower prices paid in the Philly Fed. So it's given the, you know, certainly the bond market pause. You know, they had these really hot inflation numbers and yields fell. I'm sure Steve may be talking about that later as he wrote about it this week. And the leaving equity is a little crestfallen. They haven't gotten some better news. A good time to take some profits on those numbers. The latest I've heard, reason for the move in bond yields today was that we've hit peak yields for this economic cycle. So 1.75 was it. And then the main reason for that was the explanation was that, you know, the debt to GDP ratio in Western countries is just way too high. They're too addicted to low rates and they just can't afford to raise rates.
Interesting. Yeah. We'll have to see how that all plays out. I have heard a lot of talk about it this week about bond yields having been now already well past their peak. Brad, take us through the winners and losers. I know we had earnings this week, but who were the winners and losers?
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about some of the earnings a little bit later, but for the losers this week, it looked a lot like last week, where we had some flailing in the reopening and reflation trade story. Energy took the brunt of the sell-off after crude prices have softened. They're up, WTI crude is up 48% year to date, even with some of the softening this week. Obviously, the highly levered players in the exploration and production realm like Occidental and Apache were some of the biggest losers from the equity standpoint. And you have the COVID variant concerns are still front and center, right? Latest data in the U.S., 26,000 cases. It's up considerably recently. You have headlines that are crossing the tape that Los Angeles is asking for new mask mandates. Banks like Goldman and JP Morgan in London are asking employees to wear masks in the office. That's obviously likely having a downside impact on some of our favorite COVID impacted stocks like Norwegian Cruise Line and Royal Caribbean. Another loser this week was lumber. We talked about the extraordinary move in the commodity over the past few months, up 130% year to date at one point in May. All those gains are now evaporated. Now it's flat to down. So we were talking about the inflation numbers earlier. Everyone likes to talk about used cars, lumber, all these other inputs. looks like some of that stuff is waning a little bit. So I wonder if we'll see some of that pass through in the weeks to come. But at least as far as the winners column is concerned, like I said, with the reflation trade waning, with concerns about the Delta variant, defensive sectors won out. They also tend to benefit when yields do decline, as they tend to be high dividend payers with lower growth profiles. So utilities and consumer staples and real estate were all some of the biggest outperforming sectors. And among those, Pepsi, they had earnings this week. They raised guidance, one of the bigger outperformers in the S&P, along with its peer Coca-Cola. They also report next week as earnings season starts to ramp up. And then among the more just general structural moves, you had Eversource and Evergy, which are utilities, were also big outperformers in the winners column. Obviously, we can't get through this without talking about bank earnings. They were good. You know, they mostly beat, but the market couldn't really be less impressed. I mean, you have that falling yield environment that compresses the yield curve, flattens the yield curve, which is not great for banks. So, and when that tends to happen, when money shifts away from the banks, they tend to go towards the payment processors. So there's a little rotation of the money there that was benefiting MasterCard and Visa, which were other big stocks in the S&P that were higher. Not all doom and gloom, obviously, with the market kind of floundering at highs. An interesting note from Jefferies I saw earlier this week was with regards to the continued slide in yields. Note that when we do have some of these knee-jerk moves, you don't have an immediate reaction in equities, but 3, 6, and 12 months out, it tends to perform very well in this kind of, you know, lower yield environment.
Stephen, what were you watching this week?
Any number of things. I think the interest rate story continues to be a really, really good one. We did an item earlier this week called "What Does the Bond Market Know That Everybody Else Doesn't?" As the 10-year yield, despite kind of surging inflation, still strong growth, the 10-year yield sunk below 1.3% at one point. Yesterday, the yield tried to rally a little bit today after a strong retail sales number, which really maybe not as strong as the headline says, because May was revised sharply lower. But it didn't hold on to that gains. I think as we speak, the 10-year yield is about 1.31%. So what does the bond market know, right? Is there this whole the COVID headlines that we're starting to see, whether it be from California or lockdowns in Australia, is that going to be a bigger story? Is the kind of the sugar high, the stimulus checks, is that going to slow down growth in the second half? We don't know. Getting back to inflation, I think the report this week showed 5.4% for the headline number, which is the highest since 2008, and 4.5% for the core number, which is the highest in 30 years since 1991. I would note that past performance is no predictor of what's going to happen in the future. 2008, when we last had a really high print for inflation, that was amid one of the great deflationary collapses of all time. So if you had bought bonds when inflation printed a high in 2008, you would have done pretty darn well. If you had bought bonds in 1991, which was still the early stages of the secular bond bull market, you would have done really well. So just because we have a really high print for inflation is not a reason to sell long-term treasury bonds.
Yeah, I should note Fed Chair Powell did the rounds with Congress and the Senate today. Predictably, they were not able to formulate any questions that would be of interest to the market. But it is interesting to note, though, the inflation. Remember, we're coming off of a very low base on the year-over-year numbers a year ago, right, during the height of COVID. So one would anticipate those not to, in future months to not hold, not to continue to be as high, at least the year over year print.
Yeah, and you also have to think about some of these being, you know, some people like to discount what the Fed is saying in terms of its transitory nature, but there are a lot of inputs that just from a structural basis, if you take lumber, for example, the mills had been shut, you know, and they just were a lower capacity. So we're talking about this huge run-up and a lot of input costs that might have some impact short term. What does that mean for the long term? And again, like you said, it's only kind of short. We're all working off that low base. So
Who knows? Yeah, I'd love to sit here and bash the Fed all day long. It's a lot of fun. But right now, I think I'd lean towards their transitory explanation for now. I think once last year kind of begins to factor out of the equation, I think the numbers will come down significantly.
Yeah, it seems to make sense, right?
a lot of jokes on Twitter about people trying to get their car even more used. Investment strategy.
That's right.
Okay, let's move on to the next segment of the show where we discuss our favorite stories that we have, not all of which maybe, but been involved with here at Seeking Alpha in some capacity, either as writers or editors. And let's start with Kim.
Well, I wanted to look at a JP Morgan call about the increasing likelihood of a hard landing for this recovery. And their premise is basically that the Fed's new inflation targeting policy that's going to let average inflation run hot is runs the risk of pushing the unemployment rate right below its sustainable minimum. And then looking back historically, they said that once the unemployment rate starts to rebound and go back up, it doesn't do so at a slow pace. It goes up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at the scenario of that it goes down and there's a snapback of half a percentage point, and it doesn't stop there. It goes up, another 2-3%, which increases the likelihood of a hard landing. They said it's not necessarily the case, and that the Fed could manage it.
Brad's dog has real issues with your points here, maybe with JP Morgan, but go on.
He does not see a hard landing. But so they said that what the Fed could do to avoid this was, to be a little more proactive with managing the cycle, which would mean a big change of tone for them. They'd have to go with going on expectations again rather than actual data that we see.
Hmm. Do they put in a timeline for this, when they would expect the unemployment to rebound?
They didn't say an exact timeline, but they're looking down. I mean, I think like right about when the Fed would be considering hiking. Right. So around 2023.
Okay. All right. Brad, what about you?
So a little item over the weekend last week, and partially due to my winners and losers tracking, you got to take a look at biotech. The XBI ETF is down around 25% this year. This is a sector that benefited mightily during the peak of the COVID crisis. And notably just today with Moderna, actually late last night, being announced it's being added to the S&P. Obviously one of the big standout winners during this COVID crisis, crossing the $100 billion market cap this week. But in that spirit, the title of the story was Biotech M&A May Heat Up with Potential Targets, Horizon Therapeutics, Arrowhead Pharma, and others. So this is a note out of Jefferies that our reporter Josh Feynman took a look at and tried to extrapolate some of these values that are out there. We keep talking about the equity market overheating, price to sales ratios being at all-time highs. Well, the biotech sector is rather beaten down recently, and so there might be some opportunities to pick up some relative bargains. That being said, not all of the names on the list were bargains. Some of them were in gene editing, who've run up considerably over the past couple of weeks, but definitely worth our readers and listeners checking out to see where some of the a relatively well-known analyst sees the M&A money moving in the next couple of months.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Stephen, what about you?
My favorite story, covered by expertly by Clark Schultz, among other editors on our team, was Virgin Galactic, ticker SPCE, which was $15 a share a couple months ago, rose up to 55 in the fervor over Richard Branson's flight, peaked maybe in the pre-market at 55, and now as we sit here on Friday, is trading about 31. So when I sit down to teach my kids about buy the rumor, sell the news, this is the story I'm going to go for. And it couldn't be more obvious what happened. Now, the company didn't help by putting in a $500 million equity offering on Monday morning. That kind of added fuel to the fire. But really, once the flight occurred, what else you got for us, right? When are tickets going to be offered? What's the pricing? What's the consumer market here? So the market's on to what's the next thing? What's the next catalyst? And the company doesn't really have one. So folks all.
And it's straight out of the playbook of biotech. You get an FDA approval, you have strong results, phase 1, phase 2, go out and market, raise some money.
Yep. Or AMC, meme stocks doing that too. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it goes to show that maybe billionaire vanity projects are not worth investing in if you're buying stocks. Something to think about.
Well, if you bought it at 15 and it's at 30, you're still making money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you should get out. But anyway, not investment advice. China and Hong Kong. This is not anything that was unanticipated by the market. We've had the brouhaha with Didi and other crackdowns by the Chinese authorities, ostensibly for cyber security. Who knows what they're really doing? But then we had today a missive, a policy statement by the Biden administration that U.S. companies and individuals doing business in Hong Kong, not mainland China, Hong Kong, should beware and may want to rethink this. And, you know, this is kind of a, just a, for me, especially who spent, you know, lived in the region for a couple of years. I mean, again, the writing's been on the wall for a while that Hong Kong is in a transition away from whatever it was in between the British colonial period and what's likely going to be a full-fledged, you know, Chinese, not even a vassal state, but just part of mainland China. Anyway, that was it. Not really all that much to do with investing other than maybe beware with Hong Kong listed securities. That is where now where the mainland companies are going to be listing more than in the US. So it's a very risky part of the market. There may be opportunities, but I believe that the risk may be a little more prevalent for all these issues. All right. And with that, this will conclude this week's session, this week's episode. We thank you all for being with us. If you were listening to the podcast, please do check out the video, which airs at around 4 p.m. on Friday afternoon. So before you get the audio podcast, which is available on Saturday morning at starting at 6:30 a.m. through the Wall Street Breakfast podcast account. And with that, we thank you for watching or listening, as the case may be, and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.